Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th day of March, Anno Domini 2025, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I apologize for being Chris Horn.
And we all accept your apology reluctantly. And at 5 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. And is it regrets or joy that Steve's not here? A little bit of both. He's somewhere in the Midwest. Oh, he's
there.
He
just popped on the stream for a second.
For half a second. We cannot get rid of him. He's hiding. He's on the run somewhere in the Southwest.
Doesn't want to be tracked.
Hiding among the hole in the head gang, and that's what he's doing. So you can join us. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Apple introduced a bunch of new stuff this week. They launched a new iPad Air, now powered by the M3 chip, and the new Magic Keyboard, which features a function row and a slightly larger trackpad. The regular iPad is now powered by the A16 chip, which is faster than the A14 model and comes with twice the storage, but does not support Apple Intelligence, which some see as a plus. The big announcement was the new MacBook Air with the more powerful M4 chip. That's Apple's newest silicon, and it promises great AI, of course, and up to 18 hours of battery life, despite a thin case that doesn't leave much room for a robust battery. It also comes with a new sky blue color, which makes it a must-have for the Apple fanboys, who absolutely must have the latest and greatest, and absolutely must let you know it. The week's biggest surprise was the introduction of a new Mac Studio. The new Mac Studio is available with the M4 Max and M3 Ultra chips. It's the same M4 Max chip that debuted in the MacBook Pro last year, but this is the first launch of the M3 Ultra. The M3 Ultra Mac Studio starts with 96 gigabytes of unified memory, which can be configured up to 512 gigabytes. Its SSD storage can also be upgraded to a whopping 16 terabytes.
Wow.
Yeah, no kidding. Clearly for, video processing and you can create a movie on that one. That's what that's about.
Yeah, that's just a lot of walking around storage.
Right. Rounding out the intros it's the Mac Studio, so it sits on the desk anyway.
No, you could probably have one of those huge 400-pound batteries with you.
Sure.
And just have it on your backpack.
And put it on your back. Yeah, it makes sense to me. Rounding out the intros were the new iPhone silicone cases and watch bands. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple introduced new stuff? And your choices are, I'll throw out my old stuff immediately. I'll get it all pretty quickly. I'll look into it. I'm happy with the stuff I have now, and Apple has stuff. And of course, you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. It's a pretty interesting set of stuff. The iPad line, the getting that magic, the new magic keyboard with an actual function key set up. The thing that has always confused me is by the time you've gotten a Mac, an iPad Air, the high-end iPad Air.
Yeah.
And you've added the keyboard and the mouse and everything else. What? Yeah, right there?
Yeah, good.
Okay. You might as well just buy the laptop. I mean, yes, you do get to pop the top off and walk around with it. But it's unlikely you're going to do that a lot if you've gone to the trouble of buying the keyboard and everything else.
I think Apple is trying to converge all of that technology as much as they can.
Right.
There's a lot of iOS stuff that you could just install and run, and it's completely fine on an M1 Mac of any kind. But going the other direction, not everybody wants to, you know, have the overhead or the concerns of a whole operating system. What iPad is going to get a virus? To, you know, as far as I know, there's nothing significant at all.
Yes, and I agree. I agree with that part of it. But I do agree with that part of it. But a lot of iPad people, you know, whenever we're talking to iPad people, they have issues with the on-screen keyboard. It's just not designed for heavy typing.
Oh no!
Right. So if you, you're going to put in your password like that. That's fine, but you're not going to write a novel on an iPad without a keyboard. You're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
But the issue becomes if you're that serious about the things that require a keyboard, why not just buy a laptop? Considering by the time you kit out an iPad with all of that stuff, it's the same price essentially as a MacBook, whatever.
Right. Right.
You know, it's
weird.
But
I think the battery life is, battery life with the M1s, a lot of the stuff is really good right now. But your iPad, if you're actually trying to write the novel and you're happy with that keyboard, your iPad battery is really good. It's really going to last you all day, if not more than that.
Maybe. Okay. That's fair. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. What's up, Ed?
Welcome. Thank you, guys. I have 2015 MacBook Air that I've put some drives in recently to try to transfer material from another computer, and it read some of them and doesn't read others. They've been coming from the same computers.
What kind of drives were they? I'm sorry. I think you cut
flash
out.
Flash drive. Oh, thumb drive.
Okay.
And so they don't show up in the Finder. But if I remove it, it says... It complains that I removed it without shutting it down properly.
Right. And what are the other computers you plugged it into?
PCs.
And it works there?
Yeah. Well, no, I haven't gone back. I can do that as we're talking. To see if then it will open in a PC. But they were drives that had opened in the PC and the Mac before.
Probably because of the way they were formatted. They were formatted for a PC, and the Mac is just having trouble that old of a system to read that format.
Right. It is also possible that the thumb drive just is dying.
Yeah.
The simple reality is that thumb drives don't last forever, so it depends on how old it is.
But it does open up in the PC.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And my suggestion is, whatever data you have on that thumb drive, you copy it else somewhere else as well, because it may well be that it's just not going
to... Well, copy it to that PC, create a folder, and then try to use a flash drive that you know is working with the Mac, put that in the PC, and copy that folder from the PC to the Mac flash drive, and see if you can move it over to the Mac.
Now, the other thing is... Do you notice if it's one particular USB port that has this problem, or is it any one of them?
Well, there are only two ports. If I remember correctly, I tried it in both and got the same result, which is no result. know, it just doesn't show up. But it sees that it's there because then it complains when I take it out.
Right. So it knows it's there, but it didn't mount it properly.
It's a formatted issue.
Well, it might be a format issue. But it used to read it, you say?
I believe so.
Okay, that...
You believe so, but not certain.
Right. So, well, Max,
well, I'm not
Max can read NTFS.
No, they can't. So if it's formatted as NTFS, I don't think your Mac's going to be able to read it. And the other thing I've run into mounting thumb drives or whatever on a Mac that I've had in a PC is if I have not cleanly unmounted it, where I tell the operating system to eject and it safely ejects the file system. I'm sure you, like, I'm just telling you what I've done to myself.
Yeah. Okay.
If the Mac isn't totally happy with the file system when you plug it in, it can take quite a while to mount. And I can observe that by opening Disk Utility and looking
Disk
there.
Utility. Okay.
Because you'll, like, I want to say it's in Applications, Utilities, Disk Utility. If you open that, you can see that you've plugged in the thumb drive and that it's trying to mount the file system.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Yeah.
Okay, and...
I'm trying to find Disk Utility, yeah.
Yeah, in addition, the default format for USB drive on Windows is NTFS.
Uh-huh.
Which is apparently Macs cannot read. So...
Hmm.
Yeah, so what you want, in order for it to be... universal across multiple operating systems is FAT32.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying, that if he took those drives right now that are going in the PC, copy them over to the PC,
right,
create a folder there, and then get a flash drive that has FAT32, copy that folder over to the flash drive of FAT32, which then the Mac will be able to read.
Right. And you can reformat any flash drive. That's not a problem. Just make sure you've copied the data off first, because reformatting it will wipe out all the data.
Okay, how do I reformat it?
The easiest way is probably to insert it in the Windows machine and go into, what do they call it?
It's the File Explorer now.
File Explorer.
Yep.
And you can
select the FAT32 over NTFS.
Right, and say, I want to format this and do that.
Wouldn't a Mac do it in the FAT32 also?
You can tell it now. By default, it's going to be one of the Mac file systems. You can tell it to do FAT, but you have to use
either
the
or.
Disk
there's
utility.
A way there that right. you can convert right. it to FAT32.
Right, so the program you want is the disk management tool, which you can hit start and search for disk management. And then in there, you pick the drive you want, you tell it you want to format it, and you pick the format of the formatting, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and that's how you do that, use the disk management tool.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like I know what to need. I know what I need to do.
Yep.
That's great. Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, what you'll see is that many USB drives come pre-formatted for FAT32, so they are essentially universal. Windows, Linux, and the Mac will all read them. But if you reformat a drive in Windows, or if it is not formatted and Windows auto formats it, it will pick NTFS because it assumes you're never going to use it in anything except Windows. And about 90% of the time, that's likely to be true. So that's the deal there. Be aware that, that the format of a drive is important as to whether or not that drive can be read in multiple places. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Marcy from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Marcy. What's up?
Hi, guys. Well, I'm making lemonade out of lemons. We were supposed to be on a plane yesterday to spend 3 months at our other house in a sunnier, warmer climate, and I got sick.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
But when we were in the urgency of getting ready for the countdown, I became quite frightened because we are those delinquent people. And I have to say, I'm Don's wife, so you guys know Don from his calls.
Oh, yes.
Frequent. Okay. Well, we have a lot of photo files, and I have a lot of very important files that are on SSD drives. And I got worried that we're not driving this time, that I was going to be taking these on an airplane. I just wanted to be absolutely sure nothing happened and that they would be fine and all my data would be fine. But it wasn't all backed up. So I was running out of time and tried to figure out what to do. And I thought, I'm going to call Dave in the computer stores and see time versus money if they can duplicate my three drives. One's a 1 terabyte, two are 1 terabytes, and another is larger than that. And I learned that I didn't have enough time for them to do that kind of thing. But I was getting their suggestions of what might happen. But let's assume that Dave or somebody could have done that. How long would it have taken for me to bring you my three drives and a day or so later come back and get six drives, my three plus three more that you'd put the stuff on?
For a terabyte of data, at least three times, and the other one is like 2 or 4 terabytes.
Yeah, two, and I think it's two. It's supposed to be three, but it shows more than three, but it's not full, but that's the size of the drive.
Okay, so you're talking about at least 3, if not 4.
Terabytes.
If not 5 terabytes.
Yeah.
Got it.
That,
okay.
That takes time. That takes a decent amount of time.
Could take a few days.
To move and verify. Because moving is good, verifying is better.
Yep.
And it depends. It depends on how you have everything connected, too.
Yeah.
Right? If you're using, like, a USB dongle to do stuff,
right,
there's a huge variance in how quickly they work.
But at a commercial store or retail outlet, how you guys are set up to do things faster, I would think.
No.
Not really?
Sometimes, but not always.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing, Marcy, is... Are these all photos or are they videos?
No, they're a mixture. In fact, most of my stuff is not. Anyhow, okay, but let's fast forward. I've gotten sick, so we didn't get on that plane, and so we've got a few more days. Mm-hmm. But even so, still assuming we were going to be on that plane, I decided to buy the pricey, but don't tell Don how much I paid, for P-Cloud.
Oh, yeah.
And I started working it, and it did well. And then suddenly it was going to be 5 days, I think, to finish up.
Yes, yeah.
So I left the computer on all night, and the next morning it still was needing about 4 more days. And I thought, got to get on that plane. This is not going to work. So I canceled out, and I decided, what am I going to do? Okay, now I'm sick, and we have more time. I have P-Cloud, but it's still going to take a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Is this really the best way? Clearly, we need to get the stuff in the cloud, but would it have been faster if I had just bought 3 more SSDs and did it by a hard connection?
No, because each one would have to have its own machine to start the transfer.
Why?
So if you take it to a shop,
okay,
they're still going to have to dedicate 3 machines... to do that, you know,
to make it that fast.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's one machine doing it 3 times in a row,
uh-huh,
just like you would do.
Okay.
And they don't necessarily have 3 free machines on any of these shops that they can just say, okay, we're not going to let these machines do anything except this.
Well, help me out here. I have all 3 of these drives accessible at any time with, you know, a lot of USB connectors.
Right.
You're saying that I could not say take C and copy it to F on using one computer?
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you could. But
okay, so again, there's no magic here. If you're doing them one at a time, they're fairly fast. If you're doing three at a time, they're fairly slower. Because you're doing three at a time.
No. I would just do one by one. I mean, suppose I want to take drive A here,
right.
and I'll plug in a brand new fresh one, drive mm-hmm. G,
right.
One machine. How long do you think that kind of terabyte, that kind of data transfer?
Okay, now that depends on what type of USB port you have.
Okay, I've got fast ones, I think. Not the fastest.
And the machine. I mean, just the processor and that of the machine.
Okay. All right. Now, let's compare this to using pCloud. Which would be faster?
Okay, so
the same stuff up to pCloud with a Roadrunner Spectrum connection that's not as good as it should be where we are. I was watching transfer speeds, and it was terrible.
So in that case, copying drive to drive is going to be faster.
It's going to be faster. If you're using USB 3, it's about 5 gig per second. So that, you know, if it's USB 2, it's about 10 times slower than that, about 480 megabits per second. So if it's USB 2, it's going to take quite a while. If it's USB 3, it's going to be about 10 times faster.
But if you've already paid for pCloud...
Okay. So I'm sorry to be so detailed, but last night I was trying to transfer some of Don's stuff with pCloud, and he wanted to continue to do some emailing and some other things. And I said, well, I think it's okay. You're going to have both stuff going on at the
same
time.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Does that slow down the transfer at all?
No. Well, again, it depends on your computer. How fast is your computer itself?
Well, whatever. It's.
Yeah, but you see, the problem is...
This is all relative.
There's always a bottleneck.
Okay.
And it depends on where the bottleneck is. If you've got a fairly slow machine, doing two or three things at once may slow it down a bit.
Okay, suppose then that we only do one at a time on his machine. And I did run mine all night, as I said earlier, and it still hadn't come anywhere close to making much progress. But suppose we go back to that. Does pCloud work pretty well for transferring a lot of data that I would assign it to so that it would get the transfer made? Or is it faster if I run smaller batches at a time? And I'm sorry if I'm taking too much time here. This
No, that's, I understand what you're asking. I use pCloud myself, and I put multiple terabytes of data up there. And it is fine for that. It's not going to take any less time to do multiples or to do it singles or to do a piece here and a piece there. You just let it run. The problem at that point is the upload speed that Spectrum is giving you. And that's a simple math problem. If you know what your upload speed is, and there are, you know, you can go to speed.
Your data is going through a funnel.
We do all that. We do that all the time. Okay. Or Don does it all the time. Yeah.
Right. So you go there and you say, how fast is my upload speed? How much data do I have? And then do the math. And then there's going to be a little slop over, right, because the other end is going to have to spend a couple seconds writing.
And checking.
Data and checking data and all of that. But you can get a fair idea by doing the math.
Okay. All right. Let's switch then to something else and talk more specifics about pCloud. And I'm happy to see that that is your favorite program. Do you set it up with the pCloud driver on your computer, or do you strictly work with it online?
I'm using the native client. Yeah,
right.
So that would
include the driver.
Rather than using the web-based interface.
Okay. We started out that way on Don's computer, but suddenly his C drive filled totally up, and we had a panic that there
All right. Marcy, I got to put you on hold. I got to put you on hold. We're going to be back in just A couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Chris Horn, me, Nick Francesco, Marcy from Pittsburgh, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go too far. We'll be right back.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Chris Horn.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we have Marcy from Pittsburgh on the line. You still there, Marcy?
Sure. I'm still stirring the lemonade. It needs a little more ice.
Yeah.
A question for you guys, and I'm sorry Dave's not there today.
I'm here.
Who
was Steve's not here today.
Steve. That's okay. Sorry, I can't keep you straight. How risk-averse are you, and how was I fretting too much? Do you think I could have easily carried very gently these three SSD drives in all little protective rubber cases or whatever from here to one airport stop, no connections, and not have to worry too much about data loss?
Yeah. I mean, SSDs are pretty sturdy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they get shipped all over the place.
I've dropped mine more than a few times.
Right.
If it's an
SSD, it has no moving parts.
Yeah.
So it's not prone to head crashes, which was a real problem with the spinning drives.
Technically, you could just throw them, you know, wrap them up in some clothing that you're putting in the suitcase, and they're fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so you're saying you would need all of this data.
If that was the only source for that data, I wouldn't travel with them.
Okay, that's exactly what I was going through, and that's why I'm calling and why I went through what we're doing. But I do feel that they are relatively safe, and clearly they would have been on a purse, and I would have padded them, and I would have protected them more than I would have my money that I was carrying with me. Nothing going through airport security has any effect on anything like that data, right?
Well, I personally always cringe whenever they put my laptop through the X-ray machine.
You do.
But it hasn't damaged it ever.
I've never had a problem from that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But I'm still going to get it backed up now. I've got a few more days here, so we'll be careful. Don says our upload speed is whatever it was. It's fine. It's not great, but it's not bad. Let's talk some more about pCloud. I think
Marcy, I'm sorry. We've got three people backed up waiting.
I just want to say, if you could put more information about pCloud, that would be wonderful. I think the comparison of the backup systems, the cloud backup systems, for various purposes would be a wonderful spreadsheet on your website.
All right, thank you.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. pCloud is, for those of you who don't know, is a backup solution that syncs your data with the cloud. It's not really backup. Somebody's going to call and say, it's not really backup because it's a sync. That's partially true. It does do versioning, so if you delete something, there's still a version up there.
I miss when Backblaze was affordable.
Oh, yeah.
Backblaze used to be great.
Yeah, Backblaze was really nice. But almost none of this stuff is affordable anymore. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Going back to the file system you were talking about before with the Mac.
Yeah.
Wouldn't XFAT work?
Yes, XFAT would also. Well, no, I don't know if Macs.
They do. XFAT should work. However, on a thumb drive, XFAT is usually a bad choice.
Yeah.
And it's
because he's talking about thumb drives.
Yeah.
I'm now confused between what Marcy was doing.
If you need to do FAT32, so for sharing between computers and a thumb drive, I would always use FAT32. It's only if you have a really big hard drive, like more than 2 terabytes, that you would consider XFAT.
Doesn't FAT32 limit your size of your files?
Yes.
But it's still massive. It's still, I think it's still
two
terabytes.
No. Maybe. They changed it, didn't they?
I thought it was limited, like if I wanted to put a video on a flash drive, say I had a 32 gigabyte flash drive, and I wanted to put a 5 gigabyte movie on it, it wouldn't accept it.
Are you sure? I think it will.
Yeah, work. No, it won't. It won't accept. I think over
2 gig,
4 gig,
something like that. Yeah,
interesting.
4 gig.
Well, then you so have curious. To use XFAT to transfer.
Well, I guess if you've got a USB drive that's 32 gig or 64 gig or 128 gig, then fine. XFAT is...
It should be fine.
Fine. But if you've got a 64 gig or an 8 gig or a 25... No, nobody has 25 gig. You know what I mean. Then use FAT32.
I suggest people, rather than using flash drives, yes, they're affordable and fairly fast. I suggest they get an external enclosure and use an M.2 drive if you can find one fairly inexpensive. I usually can find a 5 gigabyte fairly inexpensive. The enclosures are fairly cheap, and I think I got mine for like $32. The enclosure, it works great. USB 3.2, even though I only have a 3.1 connection, it works fantastic, and I think they're a lot more reliable than flash drives are.
Well, they're certainly not less reliable. Yes,
Steve points out that Macs actually can read NTFS.
Okay,
you just can't write it without a third party driver.
Yeah. I knew there was something there. Yeah. Or it doesn't have to be an M.2 drive. It can be any sort of, 2.5-inch SSD drive, any of that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's good, too. I like the size of the M.2s. You can even get the smaller ones. I forgot what size they are, and the storage doesn't, change. And you can swap them out in these enclosures.
All right, excellent. Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Have a good day.
Thanks, Mark. You, too. Yeah, M.2 is just another size and shape. They look like sticks of gum.
Yeah.
And you can get them in, 2 terabytes.
But that's the standard right now. Like, if you got a new computer, laptop, anything, that's the actual hard drive.
Right. I did get a new computer. It came with a 1 terabyte M.2, and there was a slot for another M.2, so I got a 4 terabyte to be my home directory.
Yep.
And it was easy and simple to put in. Well, it was easy and simple for my daughter to put in. Between the arthritis and the neuropathy, these are just like hams on the end of my wrist. But my daughter did it fast and easy, so that was nice. I told her she can now add PC Guru to her resume. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. What's up, Gary?
Hi, I have a backup question as well, and mine is very simple. I'll just give you a quick sketch of my a little background. I've got a Lenovo ThinkPad 365, and it's 6 years old. It still runs very well. It's a little slower. I've got the latest version of Windows 10, and it's up to date with the latest Windows update. This is the problem, and it's so simple, but it's the problem of an aging brain. As you know, with Windows, you can only have one backup drive in at a time, and I switch back and forth between two SSD drives to back up, and I've got it plugged in, a USB port, and the hard drive lights up, so I know it's connected, but I cannot get it installed to get it to back up. And it's just a memory problem. I haven't done it in about 2 months, and I'll be 82 at my next birthday. And you can teach an old dog new tricks, but don't expect him to do it 2 months later.
All right, so is this
another trick?
This is a USB drive you're plugging in. Is it a thumb drive or a bigger drive?
It's a bigger drive. It's not a thumb drive.
Okay. And it used to work?
Yes.
And the light comes on?
Yes.
And if...
The problem is when I click on backup, the computer doesn't find it as the drive to...
Do you use a program for backups?
I beg your pardon?
Are you using a specific program to run your backups?
Well, it's in out of the control panel, and it's backup and restore.
Do you have Windows 7?
No, it's 10. Windows 10. I know.
Okay.
I know that sounds weird, but
no, I know. Like it's if you can get to the control panel in Windows 10, there's a whole bunch of features of Windows 7 that are still there.
I know it. Hello.
Yep. And I think what I do. I think I would look in disk management. And when I plug that USB hard drive in, I would see if it shows up there. And it just shows up as a hard drive, and maybe the file system is broken or
the connection
something.
Connection on the computer could be bad. That if it's not seeing it when he's mounting it and unmounting it.
Yep.
Because it should, all of a sudden, if he's in... if you click on My PC and open up that screen, when you plug that flash, that drive in, it should all of a sudden, add a letter and the device. And then, conversely, when you unplug it, it should disappear. And if it's not doing that, there could be something wrong with that USB device, port.
Could be the port, could be just the cable.
Yep.
Yeah. In a USB cable, there are both the power and data connections.
Okay.
And it may well be that the data connections are... Look, the reality is that none of us are really gentle when we plug and unplug a USB device.
That's right.
And it is very possible that you have damaged either the port or the drive itself, the connector itself.
Yeah.
So if you have another port on that machine, try connecting it into that one and see if it works.
All right. That's a good tip. And I'll look at disk management as well. Well, while your program's on, if I can get back in within the next hour and a half, I will if it doesn't work.
All right. Thanks.
And you can always try a different cable. Because I can say that I wasted an hour of my life last week before I realized that I was using a USB power only cable and not a USB data cable.
Oh.
And it was not clearly labeled. And the cable still worked, but I threw it out with such swear words in my mind.
That's why they call it a curse.
Life is too short to have the power-only cables do that to you.
All right, Gary, thanks.
Okay, thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Lord knows I've done the same thing way too many times. Wrong cable.
Somebody's
bad
name.
Cable. You spend
cable.
So much time. You invest yourself in it, and then suddenly, 45 minutes later, you think, I wonder if it's the cable.
Okay, hold on. We'll have you on just a
minute. Yeah, so... Here's the thing with the USB cables, especially if you're relying on it for charging or even data speed, there is a huge variance in how well all of these things work. And testing them is very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I have little testers and stuff like that, but
getting
it so that I have some certainty that, I can rely on this cord.
Right. You can buy USB testers online. In any one of the many online stores that sells electronics.
Right. But they only work if you have a load on the cable.
Right, right.
If you're playing it in and everything is charged, you're not really testing anything.
Right, right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Heather from Brockport, New York. What's up, Heather?
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm hoping you can help me. I'm not really sure. I'm not the most techie person, and I feel like that'll be obvious with my question. I currently have an Apple, iPhone, and I have a data package that's at least 15 years old through AT&T. And whenever I go to the Apple store, if I have to have an upgrade with my phone or issues, for years they've always told me don't get rid of this package because it's the value. You know, I guess the streaming, I don't really know. That's the part I don't understand. But now, so it's a grandfather plan, and AT&T for the last several years will not do anything with the plan. They say it doesn't exist anymore, you know, but they keep jacking up my monthly price by a lot compared to what other people are paying. And so when I go to look at switching to other plans, and they say, okay, you can have unlimited or free data or whatever, you know, and I think, okay. And then when I go back to Apple, they say, oh, gosh, it's not remotely the same. So I was wondering, is there a place that you look at on the phone to understand what you have? Because Apple never expands, but I've heard it repetitively for years. And then, of course, AT&T doesn't want to give me any information because they want me to get frustrated enough with the high cost and get rid of the plan. So I guess if I do go to switch at some point, what am I really giving up? Because that's the part I don't understand.
If the people at the Apple store are telling you don't ever switch,
telling me never to give up. I mean, telling you for about 10
have them years write it now. Down. Right. Have them write down what those features are, especially if AT&T is making it so that you can't really see it because it's you know, not part of their system anymore. Unfortunately, your phone, I don't think, has any concept of what any of that stuff is, right? It's totally a billing thing.
Okay, I got you. Okay. I just know that, you know, supposedly, you know, if you, whatever, what I mean, I guess what does it mean to have unlimited data? To truly have, I guess, one of the original, but, you know.
Yeah. I know people that are in the same situation where, for whatever reason, a decade, two decades ago, they got some deal with the unlimited data, and it's really actually unlimited data, and it's, you know, like Willy Wonka golden ticket good.
Right. And one of the things that differentiates it, okay, back in the day when you had unlimited data, you really had unlimited data at the top speed. Okay. Nowadays, most plans, when they say unlimited data, you get a little bit of data at the top speed,
yeah,
and then they drop you way down to a much lower speed. You still can have all the data you want. It just is super slow. And that may be the situation here, in which case you keep that plan.
Even though it's, if you only knew the monthly price of it with no extras, I mean, they won't, you know, they won't let you alter your plan in other capacities. Like with travel, if you want to have international added, you can't add any other features.
Right.
They've really pigeonholing me, trying to get me to obviously rid the plan.
How often do you travel? How much do you need any of those extras, et cetera, et cetera, versus...
So, I guess that's what I was going to ask you. So when you talk about the Golden Goose plan from years ago versus somebody who has unlimited data now and you only get a little bit of time. I mean, if you're on a flight that's several hours, whether you're watching something on Netflix or you're doing something for work, what would you see happen? Would it only, you know, would it be like a very slow connection, I guess? Because, I've never experienced this, so I don't know what other people go through because they have this plan for so long.
Well, you know what? I think you can figure this out on your own. If you log into the AT&T website, they should tell you what your data usage has been per month for the last year at least, right? And you can look at, based on your plan, if I switch to their current unlimited plan, how many gigabytes per month does that give me? Let's say it's 10. Have you used more than 10 gigabytes of data per month in the last year?
You can also check it on the iPhone, apparently, in the cellular data usage section. Steve says that.
Okay.
And then you have to decide how often do I do international flights, and how important is that to me to be able to have data on my phone as opposed to bring a laptop or an iPad or whatever else you have.
Yeah.
It really depends on a whole bunch of those kind of things. But set it all out and see for yourself, you know, what would be better for you.
I would be surprised if you've used more than your allotted 10 gigabits or something.
Well, like you said, if you're watching a movie on your phone, you're going to blow through the
limit. But you're probably on Wi-Fi for that. Like, right? A lot of times
if you're on Wi-Fi, yes. Yeah. But she's talking about, like, in a plane or, you know.
Well, I mean, when you're on a plane, if you're not using, a lot of times, because I travel a lot for work every week, so when I'm on planes all the time, you know, you're not always on Wi-Fi. You just download movies, and you're in airplane mode, and, you know, that's what I'm accessing. Does that make sense?
You download the movie on Wi-Fi. That doesn't use any of your data.
Sorry, we just lost power for a second.
Yeah, we did.
We had to bring our microphones back up.
Yeah, that's
what that was. So here's the thing. The cellular data that you use is separate from the Wi-Fi data.
Okay.
So if you do a lot of stuff over Wi-Fi, like download a movie, doesn't count against your cellular data. So that's why Steve says check the cellular data usage on your iPhone. That's separate from the Wi-Fi usage. Now, if that's what I do. I download stuff to my, I download it to my Chromebook. But you can download movies to your Chromebook, your phone, whatever, and then watch them. And that doesn't use any of your data because you're in airplane mode.
Okay. Good to know. Okay. I was kind of wondering, again, as I prefaced, I'm not the most technical person when it comes to this stuff. And so just kind of curious how it all, you know, works. But now I have a better understanding. Okay.
No, I think you got it now.
Yes, I do. Thank you. And I'm really glad I called because it's been something that's been an itch for a while that I, you know, wanting to get to the bottom of.
And now you can just sit back and relax and enjoy the sunshine.
Exactly, yes. And I'm sorry you lost power since it's such a nice day.
It is a beautiful day. Power's back.
I got one computer that's still out here. But
yeah, well, anyway, thank you, Heather.
The break.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah. So there's a distinct difference among where you get your data, right? So there's Wi-Fi data, and almost every Wi-Fi plan these days is unlimited data. If you, assuming you're not getting your data through one of those phone hotspots.
Right.
Things.
Right.
But, you know, if you're on Spectrum or you're on fiber or you're on, you know, whatever, you're getting unlimited data. Separate from that is the cellular data that you would use when you're, like, out in your car and you're listening to music. That's coming over the cellular data in your cell phone. Again, unless you have a data plan for your car.
Which
well,
is a
no,
thing.
That's still going to be
which is,
cellular.
Of course, a thing these days.
That's still going to be cellular, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, at any rate, the point here is there are multiple types of data, and in Heather's case, she's got an iPhone, so she can look at the cellular data usage separate from the Wi-Fi data usage and see how much data she actually uses on any given month. Now, she should do that on a month where she travels. Because that's the whole point of that, right?
Yeah. So, and if you, if you want to know the bottom line, I would probably log into the AT&T or Verizon or whatever website and see what they say your data usage is. Because regardless of what my phone says,
I agree. They may disagree.
Yeah,
and you should believe them. I get that. It's not easy to find that information, but you can. And if you can't, feel free to go into the store and ask one of their service representatives. That's your information. They should give that to you.
It might be one of the few times where I would really lean on the service rep.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I will say that for my plan, which is not AT&T, for my plan, I have had only wonderful experiences in the store. They've been very helpful. Even when I didn't buy a phone from them, they helped me transfer data. Again, with these hams for hands, sometimes connecting little fiddly bits, it's not easy for me.
Typing with hot dogs is not easy.
Yeah, exactly. Then everything everywhere all at once scene.
Yeah, yes,
that
exactly
spoke
what
to
I was
me.
Thinking. Was,
spoke to yeah. me. With something like that, it's important to be aware of exactly where your data are coming through, and therefore that'll tell you how much of those data you are actually using. All right. That music tells us that the first hour of this show is in the books. But don't go too far away. There's a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. Another hour of Dave Enright. Another hour, luckily, of Chris Horn. Another hour of me, Nick Francesco. Another hour of watching Steve type on the computer back in the hole in the head gang where he's staying. And a whole other hour of you, but only if you give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Don't go too far away. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I am the winter version of Chris Horn.
And it's bleak but charming. At 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we have Martin from Walworth, New York on the line. What's up, Martin?
Hey, Nick.
How you doing?
And Dave and Chris, I just wanted to make a suggestion for your listeners out there that are looking for backups and inexpensive pieces of equipment. SK Hynix has a Tube T31 1 terabyte USB 3.2 Gen 2 compatible solid state flash drive out on the market. And it's been reviewed by a whole bunch of the reviewing groups out there. And it gets a solid 10 gigabit per second output on a USB 3.2, and it's about 1,000 megabytes per second, so it's good for backups. I use it with Acronis and with Windows Backup on Windows 11, and it's pretty much flawless. So I've got a couple of those guys, and I also have a Western Digital EX2 Ultra MyCloud unit that's about the same speed, and it carries 2 6-terabyte drives in it and mirror, and works really well. So I was just putting them out there for suggestions for your listeners to, you know, possibly get some equipment if they need it to do backups or do copies of their disk drives.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great one.
Have fun. Bye-bye.
Yep, you too. Bye.
Yeah, there are so many options for backup. One of the things that many of us use is some sort of NAS drive. NAS is NAS, Network Attached Storage. So on your network, you have a device that, okay, really, it's a little computer.
Yeah.
But all that computer does is connect drives to the network. And so you can have, I've seen configurations where you can put 5 or 6 drives into bays, or I've seen just, you know, one drive in a box. And you can use that as a backup. Now, if you go to asknick.com/backup.php, you will see that we recommend the 3-2-1 data plan. Three backups in two separate places, one of which is offline. So if you have a backup NAS in your home, that's not part of the 3-2-1 plan. It is a second backup,
right?
But it's in the same place as your home. Now, God forbid your home catches on fire or whatever, you don't have, that backup is no more good to you than the original drive it was on.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a fire safe I've seen tested that I would trust,
to
have a hard drive in it.
Right, and so that's why we recommend something like pCloud or one of those where you can back up your data to the cloud. We were talking about where you could used to be able to back up to somebody else's
Backblaze.
House. Backblaze. You used to be able to say, oh, Chris, here's a hard drive. You put it on your network,
yeah,
and then I'll back up to that one. Chris gives me a hard drive. He backs up to that one, and we now have backups in each other's homes. I don't know if there's anything comparable to that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, there are other services out there, like OwnCloud or other synchronization tools for doing that kind of thing.
Quite like Backblaze.
Nothing is cleanly handled.
Right.
Where for a normal consumer, you could just use it.
Right. I use pCloud. I back up to other machines. I back up to
Linda. Where you
multiple?
From?
Turn off your mic.
Okay, hold on.
Okay, no, he's not going to do that. I back up to multiple Raspberry Pis, which are essentially NAS drives in my configuration.
Yeah, I mean a NAS is just a computer.
It's just a computer that with a drive on it. And so I do that so that if my main machine dies, I have a real fast local backup that I can restore from.
Yeah.
That's what that's for.
Yeah.
But if something, God forbid, happens to my home, that is not a backup.
Right.
The backup in the cloud, my pCloud backup, that's my backup.
Right. And if you want to get picky in IT terms, backups are a different thing than disaster recovery.
Right, true.
Backups have a sense of historical. I can go back to the way this folder was a month ago.
Versioning, right.
Versus I only have a synchronized copy. And that's a big difference between some of the different services. But having real backups, historical changes, is probably more expensive.
Yeah, generally speaking. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Linda calling from somewhere in Ohio. Welcome, Linda. What's up?
Good afternoon. It's Willoughby, Ohio.
Willoughby.
I've been a fan of outside Cleveland. I've been a fan of WordPad on my desktop on Windows for years, just for dumping down quick notes during a Zoom call or anything. Windows 11 update 24H2 successfully, surprisingly, installed recently, and I knew that they had killed WordPad. So my simple question is, or question and a half. I downloaded AbleWord, and on the first blush, it seems nice, but it doesn't really have a lot of the Windows compliant shortcuts that would be consistent with a Word user for 30 years. So I was wondering if you have any recommendations or two for a simple open source replacement for WordPad.
Yeah, there isn't one I know that does those specific things, has the shortcuts. Right. Ooh. Certainly, Abbey Word is an excellent, simple word processor.
Yeah.
Are we saying Able Word or Abbey Word?
Oh, I was talking about Abbey Word. You're talking about Able Word?
Ah. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, have you, I'm sure, these guys have suggested LibreOffice or OpenOffice before, and I'm also pretty sure that in settings, there's options for, hey, what kind of shortcuts do I want? I just want the standard Windows ones, right? Like a lot of the multi-operating system open source tools give you choices on, hey, I need my shortcuts to be just like WordStar or, you know, something. So they meet you where you're comfortable. And I can't picture it in my head where it is, but I'm pretty sure that LibreOffice or OpenOffice will have that.
Okay, that's great. I've used OpenOffice before on, you know, like a backup machine that I throw in my purse when I have to take notes somewhere, but I'll absolutely check that out. It's certainly going to have lower file sizes and bandwidth, I think, than Word. So
That'd be great.
And
thank
yeah,
you.
Like if you miss WordPad, I think WordPad will use RTF files, right? Like
yeah.
You can keep using RTF files, and I know TextEdit on a Mac will use RTF files.
Yep.
Okay.
And I believe you can create keyboard shortcuts in Abbey Word, but there's a program called DefKey that will do that if it doesn't.
Okay. Wonderful. I asked for one or two, and I got three or four. Thank you so much.
There you go.
And thank you for I'm so delighted that I learned about your show recently, and you guys do great work.
Thank you. Now, your job is to get everybody in Willoughby, Ohio to listen.
Not without a user group, I'm sorry.
That's the truth, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, I'm an old user groupy person.
Well, we have often called ourselves the user group of the year. Bob Smith.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, you're absolutely exceeding the expectations for that, so keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. We consider ourselves a value-add company. Thank you.
I like it. Take care.
Thanks.
All.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Not a company, but a group. A value-add thing, whatever it is we are. All right. I'm going to take a moment and read another. We have no one on the line, Dave? Okay. some Microsoft stuff. Just days after Microsoft announced that Skype was going away in favor of Teams, a new Microsoft 365 outage affected Teams customers and caused call failures. Despite Microsoft saying the incident only affected the Teams communication platform, users reported a much broader impact. They also experienced issues connecting to Outlook, OneDrive, and Exchange, or checking email messages. Now Microsoft says they fixed the problem. It was caused by, I hope you're sitting down, a buggy update. They say it fixed it, and all your problems should be gone now, except Exchange Online users are still having problems with iOS. This comes, and well, of course, it's iOS, so why would Microsoft care?
They care.
Ish. This comes after three similar issues in January, but it's all good now. Well, I say it's all good now, but CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, has warned U.S. federal agencies to secure their systems against attacks exploiting vulnerabilities in Cisco and Windows systems. While the Cybersecurity Agency has flagged these flaws as actively exploited in the wild, it is yet to provide explicit details regarding this malicious activity and who is behind it. Neither Microsoft nor Cisco has yet to update their security advisories after CISA tagged the two vulnerabilities as actively exploited in attacks, so don't hold your breath for a quick fix. However, Microsoft has taken down an undisclosed number of GitHub repositories used in a massive malvertising campaign that impacted almost 1 million devices worldwide. So how's your confidence in Microsoft these days? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. Oh, that reminds me, again, I shouldn't have to repeat this, but there is no legitimate company on this planet who will ask for payment in gift cards. Let me repeat that. There is no legitimate company on this planet that will ask you for payment in gift cards. There's a new scam going around where they say, take a picture of the back of the gift card and send it to us.
Yeah.
Don't. Do not do that. It is a scam. The IRS will never ask you for that. Microsoft, Apple, nobody will ever ask you for a gift card. It's the dumbest idea on the planet. Please don't fall for it.
And I to add on to that, generally speaking, Google will never call you. Amazon will never call you.
Nor Microsoft.
None of us spend enough money with those companies to warrant a phone call for anything. If they want your attention, they will just turn you off.
I worked for several companies who spent every year a metric bucket load of money with Microsoft. They never called us. They're certainly not going to call you.
Yeah.
Yes. Just like the IRS, you know, unless you set up an appointment for them to call you, you got to schedule it.
Right. But you schedule it. They're not going to call you and say, hey, we're going to call
you. No, they're not calling you randomly unless you have set up a time and date that, you know, because in their system, they are very busy. I'll admit, you know, and you can call them and set up a time, a specific date and time, and they will call you back.
But unless you have done that.
Otherwise, right. They will never call you out of the blue.
That's exactly right. And in addition to that, Bill Gates is never going to send you money. Elon Musk is never going to send you money.
Heck, none he's still trying people. To recoup money because of his rocket ships keep blowing up.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
4 for 4?
Yeah.
I would also add that it's unlikely that Easy Pass or whatever your toll road billing is ever going to call you and say that you have unpaid tolls. I've been getting that text scam lately.
Oh, yeah.
Or the scam that, you know, all right, yeah, you've got a package that's coming from UPS, USPS, and you've got to send so much money so that they can release the package and continue on to send it to you.
Yeah, no.
So I used to work for a company that did basically training for anti-phishing. So companies would send these fake phishing emails to their own employees, and there's all different triggers that people use to get people to click on stuff. But really, one of the main tools for a normal person to spot one of these phishing emails or text messages is to read the domain name. Right, especially those junk spams you get. If you look at where it's coming from, it's not Amazon. It's, you know, XYZ dot.
It's Amazon at Amazon dot XYZ dot com.
Maybe right, the good ones might be that, and a lot of them are just, you know, Bob's account from Yahoo.com or Hotmail or something that have nothing to do with the content of the spam.
And it's just I've lost my train of thought, and it was a good one too. Dang it!
I probably wasn't very good then.
It was good for me.
It might have been okay.
Relatively good. relatively good
for hot dogs. It was good
for hot dogs. It was good. I really wanted to bring this up too.
About what were scams? The scams.
It was about scams.
Do you want to get a fish sandwich? I brought up fishing now. Like, hey, because I could go for a fish sandwich. I'll be honest.
I can always go for a fish sandwich. Oh, and that's the... Well, okay. So that's the thing. What they prey upon is fear.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And immediacy.
Yeah.
You have to do this right now. Okay. You don't have to do this right now. There's nobody on the planet who will give you 10 minutes to do something. So one of the things you want to do, and we say this all the time, right now... Go find the legitimate address for your bank, your credit cards, the other people you work for, and bookmark them. Then, when you get one of these things that says, oh, you're in arrears, you owe us $50,000, instead of clicking on the link in the email, which you should never, ever, 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 ever do, you go to the bookmark where you know it's legitimate, and you take a look. And I guarantee you it's not there. There is no problem there.
Yeah.
So be aware that you know, there are ways to mitigate the problem. And the first thing to do is don't panic. Grab your towel and don't panic. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is the not panicking Doug from Rochester, New York. What's up, Doug?
Okay, hi. This involves Ubuntu, of course. About a year ago, Ubuntu crashed, wouldn't start, but I had backup, so I just reinstalled the OS. But my external hard drive was plugged in at that time. And there's a bunch of files stuck in the trash bin. And I cannot for the life of me figure out how to get rid of them. If I try to do them one at a time by saying, you know, delete from trash, it says I don't have permission. And then I yell at the computer and nothing happens. And,
what? Yelling doesn't help it?
Not at all. And I use some choice words, too, but...
you do surprise me.
This is a curiosity more than anything. Why are these things still here? If I delete some new files and then try to empty the whole folder, it'll delete the new ones, but never the old ones. So.
Right. Okay, so if you go to the old files and you select... Are you familiar with the command line, or do you prefer the graphical interface?
I would rather use the graphical interface only because, and this is kind of pathetic, I have yet to learn how to change directories from the command line.
All right. We'll start with the graphical interface. If you open up the trash and you take a look at one of these files, if you right click on it and select properties from the drop down,
right,
the third tab under properties, depends on which
Ubuntu, which, but in there somewhere
is permissions.
2104.
You'll find permissions. And you have three types of permissions.
Mm.
There's the permissions of the owner of the file. There's the permissions of the group of the file. And there's the permissions of everybody else. So, for example, let's say I own a file. I'm the owner. I give myself...
Let me interrupt for a second.
Sorry?
Let me just interrupt a second. I hit properties, and all I have for tabs is basic, open with, and audio video, and that's it. Maybe I'm using the file manager that came with the OS.
Because depending on which flavor of Ubuntu you're using, it's a different file manager.
Okay, now we're going to have to talk about the command line.
Good news. Here we go.
Here we go.
Here we go. I got it. It's open.
Okay.
Is the trash folder just trash? On Ubuntu?
For
GNOME?
I'm looking.
Well, what's interesting, if I look at properties, here's something I tried. I searched for one of the file names to see if it existed anywhere else, and it directed me to a folder called .trash-1000, which is empty.
That's a Mac thing, isn't it?
No, I think that's the way Ubuntu does it also. So there's so many little reasons that it could be different. So the problem here is that the user that owns those files is not you. It might be the super user, which is called root. It might be a different user number from your old computer, which it has the same name, but maybe, you're 2000 now and you were 1000 before. That could be either one of those. And the simplest fix, if you know the command line, is to CD or change directory into the trash folder and then use a command called sudo, S-U-D-O.
Well, hold on. Let's back up a second.
Yeah.
So at the command line, if you type ls minus a, ls space dash a.
Ls means list.
And that's just means list.
Like,
so you list of all your files, including the ones that start with a dot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the dot trash 100?
Let's see. Negative, because I haven't changed directory over to the external hard drive.
Right. Do that first. So
Because this isn't in your own trash folder. This is the trash folder that's in the external drive.
Right.
Correct. So if I unplug the external drive, those files are not there.
Okay, so what you have to do is CD space / media.
Bingo.
And hit enter. And then do an ls and tell me what you see. I'm assuming that this external drive is currently plugged in.
Yes, it is. All I see is my name, Doug.
Good.
CD
space Doug. And if it's a capital D, use a capital D. Capitals matter.
I'm in media / Doug $.
Okay, now do another LS.
Aha. Uh-huh.
What do you see?
The name of the external drive.
There you go.
A lot easier.
So CD into that.
I would do a CH own on the whole thing because it's your hard drive.
Well, we'll do that on the trash folder, just in case.
It just told me too many arguments. Should I have slashed that first?
So, it's no, slash it's CD. So, right now, if you do an LS, you see that name.
Correct.
So, CD space, type the first couple letters and hit the tab. And it should fill in the rest of the line for you.
It did.
Now hit enter.
And there we are. We're in the drive.
All right. Now do an LS space dash A. This is the day of picky stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is interesting. We're looking for that trash folder. Oh, the trash folder's in there.
Yep.
Dot trash. Yeah, okay.
Okay, now I want you to type this next command. Mm-hmm. I want you to type chown, C-H-O-W-N.
Dash capital R.
Right.
Yeah, space dash capital R.
Done.
And then, yeah, so keep typing. Don't hit enter until we say...
To hit enter.
Yeah.
Elephant. Okay.
And then the name of the folder.
You could just
dot
do a
trash.
Yeah, right. And go you ahead. Could do dot, potentially. Yeah, but dot trash. Dot trash.
Correct. I did. It's exactly what it shows in the LS list. Okay. Chown space dot capital R space dot trash dash 1000.
And actually, I think we steered you wrong.
I think we did too.
Yeah, so it's...
I want a refund.
No problem.
Let's back up. Let's delete that command line and type it from the start. So we need to start with sudo, which is S-U-D-O.
Right. Okay. Super user do.
Yep. Space chown, C-H-O-W-N.
Uh-huh.
Space dash capital R.
Mm-hmm.
And then your username, which sounds like it's Doug.
It is, yes.
Yep. And so it's Doug, and then a space, and then dot trash. And you should hit enter. It'll prompt you for your password.
Trash, slash, and dash 100 or whatever.
Bob's your uncle.
Yep. All right, we're going to take you. Stay on the line. Stay on the line. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with sound bites right here. On member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I guess I'm still Chris Horn.
Well, if you got to be somebody.
Yep.
You could do better. And we still have Doug from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Doug. You still there?
I'm still here.
And
the result was...
Yeah.
Well, what I have for each file is chown, changing ownership of, followed by the file name, followed by bad news, input slash output error.
Oh.
So is this...
That, to me, means that your hard drive has a problem. That's not an error that chown will complain about on its own. That's like, hey, my hard drive is super unhappy. To me, that means that you need to unmount the file system, and it's called an FSCK. You need to check the file system and repair it, and that should clean that stuff up.
Well, that sounds interesting enough. What's the name of that command?
Well, I think it's a thing you should be able to do in your file manager.
It's similar to check disk in Windows, I guess, huh?
Yeah, it's very similar. Purpose. And what you want to do, again, 50 different versions of Ubuntu, but in your start menu, whatever that's mm-hmm. called on your version, you should be mm-hmm. able to type the word disks in the search bar. Mm-hmm. And there is a program called Disks.
Oh, I've got that. Yeah, okay.
Okay. If you run that, you'll see your various disks, and one of them will be this connected drive that you've got. And in that, you should be able to, I'm starting mine now so that I'm not lying to you completely. Because disks is disks is disks.
Let me find mine.
You should be able to pick a partition first if it has multiple partitions on it. If it doesn't, just pick the... Well, no. You pick the drive. Then you pick the partition on the drive. And there may only be one, but you still have to click on it. In my case, it turns green. But it will turn some color. And then underneath that are two little gears.
Yep.
And if you click on that, one of the choices will be repair file system.
Yeah, okay.
And so,
I know what my computer's doing for the next 2 hours, so...
It might not take that long.
Okay.
But you should do that, and if that should fix it. And if it doesn't, you've got bigger problems.
Yeah. I mean, luckily,
I'll ignore these. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, this is the same order of operations on Windows and Mac. It's just a different set of programs.
Right.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. All righty. Well, this external hard disk's a year old, and I hope it's not bad, but we'll find out shortly.
You'll find out. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for your help.
Yep. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Yep.
And the good news is, the bad files are in the trash, so he doesn't even have to look at them if he doesn't want to.
Hello? Making changes to a semi-broken file system.
I agree with that.
It doesn't get better. It doesn't heal itself until you clean that out.
No, and
it's probably just a little, you know, file system wrinkle and not a hardware problem.
Yeah, that's what we hope. Hardware problems. It's just
Yeah.
Two behind the ear, dump it in the canal. But I'm Italian. Maybe you do it a different
way. Yeah, I don't. I mean, you do it the way you want to do it.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Marie from North Chilai, New York. Hi, Marie. What's up?
Hi. I'm planning on exporting all of my emails from... I'm with a very small email company, which I like very much, and I'm going to keep it, but I'd like to export the ones I have into a Gmail account that I have. I have two questions about it. One question is just like if there's anything I need to be particularly watchful for or whatever, or concerned about. I did this once a long time ago, but it's been like 20 years. The other thing is that with this small email company I have, I want to delete a whole lot of them, a lot of the older ones, but the function doesn't work on it where I can go back that far. And also, if I want to delete by person, that function doesn't work anymore either. And so I'm kind of wondering, when I export these things, will I be able to do those functions on a new exported batch?
Okay, let me offer a separate solution.
Yes.
In Gmail, you can have multiple accounts.
Right, I already do.
Okay, so have you tried adding that account to your Gmail system?
Not yet. I have not done this yet. I'd like to keep the old one also. I'd like, you know, the people that write to me, I'd like to keep that going.
Right. Yeah, of course. But you should be able to add that account to Gmail.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Once you've done that, again, it depends a lot on the other end, if you know, whether or not you can see all those old emails, et cetera, et cetera. But assuming you can, you should be able to just copy them over to import them. You could do an export from Gmail to a file, and then an import back into a different Gmail account, or just copy and paste them all over one, you know, one batch at a time.
Yeah, when you add the other account, that should show up in Gmail as another folder. And you should be able to select
and then
move those into your like Gmail's all mail folder. I think that should work.
Yeah, you should be able to see. Yeah,
but you never really have to do an export. Right?
Like okay, well, maybe I'm not clear on importing, exporting, you know, on the terminology. All I want to do is move them from that small email account. I want to move it into my Gmail address that I already set up.
So, right.
Yeah, so I guess maybe I'm not clear on...
No, that's... that. Yeah, absolutely, but that is called import and export.
Yeah.
Other thing she could do to make life a little bit easier, might be less confusing, is if she opens up two incidences of, her, say, Chrome, and she can then be, you know, have the old account over on, say, the left-hand side, and then go over and open up a tab for the new Gmail account and go copy-paste from one to the other.
I'm not following some of this, because you mean I can't just move everything from my old account to the Gmail account?
You can.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
And there are just multiple different ways of doing it. We all have a different idea, which is the easiest.
Yeah, I have to keep it simple for
yeah,
the
so the easiest
I
thing I think to do is to, in Gmail, you can import your mail and contacts from another program.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the words there. Yeah.
Right. So if you do that, it will ask you, what is the other account?
Okay.
And it will ask you for the username and the password and all of that, you know, all of that, email address and the password. And it should then be able to just follow the bouncing prompts.
Okay, yep.
And it should be able to import all of your mail into Gmail.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
At which point, all the mail that came over will be available to do anything you want to do with it.
Yeah.
You can also do the same with contacts. So all the people from the old thing would be in new in Gmail.
Okay, good point, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There you go, and that's really all you need.
Okay, and so, good. I'm glad that you spelled it all out for me, and that I'll do that. And then I guess the other thing I was worried about, like I said, was will this retain that dysfunction of the other email?
No.
It should work better then.
Yeah.
So, you're right, and that's why I say everything that does come over. Mm-hmm. I don't know the other system. I don't know if it will let you move all the really old mail over.
Oh.
But if it does, it will be available to do anything you want to do with it in Gmail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
Yeah. Can I ask you a different question, too, or do you have time?
Quickly.
Yeah. I only want a quick answer this time, and I'm not going to get at this right away anyway. But a couple of times you were talking about and now I'm blanking out on the word. Now that I have to do this quickly, I forgot you know what? I'll have to call back. I know what it is. I'm just blanking out right now.
Welcome to that club. We all do it.
CRS.
Get a little more nervous when I'm on the phone, knowing everybody's listening to me.
No, I get it. I absolutely get it. Sorry, Marie.
All right, I'll call. It's a simple question, and I'm going to do this another time. So I'll call it back another time.
We're here every Saturday from 12 to 2. You know.
Yeah, I know. I know. I listen most of the time. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Marie.
Thanks.
Bye bye.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah. We all believe me.
Yeah. Steve says he's going to post links on a website.
Oh, Steve, you know, I'm not going to say it to his face because he'll get a swelled head. He's the best. So, you know, that's great. That's great. Steve does an amazing job every week. He's not even here and he's posting stuff.
Right. He paid me to say that and agree with you.
Yeah. Well, he owes me money and I'll never collect it. I know that. All right, back to the phones. People are going to believe us. What, you pay each other? Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Rich? Oh, no.
Just a quick thing I wanted to sprinkle out there for all the listeners to hear, maybe.
Yeah.
My wife just called Spectrum to jiggle our account, if you will. And the person on the phone told her that the mail from Spectrum is going away.
Oh, yeah.
There is no more email from Spectrum.
Yeah, we didn't we report on that at some point?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yes.
Did you?
Yes, and that is true. So for everybody, that's why we're telling people get a Gmail account, get, you know, whatever yeah. makes you happy. But well, in the first place, we recommend that people never use the account from their internet service provider, just in case they decide to change internet service providers.
Yeah,
that's much more ephemeral than say a Gmail address, which you can keep forever. So yeah, good thought there, Rich.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. I didn't remember you saying it. The last caller even helped me out because my wife just asked me the same question. How are we going to get my emails off the Spectrum account and get them somewhere else?
Yeah, in Gmail, if you use the website, one of the choices is import and export, and you can import. Just put in the username and password.
It's nice that you don't need to use a third-party program or anything to move the emails. So Gmail will just handle it for you.
Right.
And I imagine that Outlook.com will do the same thing, but I haven't checked that myself.
Right.
Just a question. I maybe I'm misunderstanding a little bit. I was thinking of just putting her Spectrum account or her Rochester dot whatever it is into her Gmail account so that then everything would come over. And if the Spectrum account, say, turned off, if you will, she would still then have all her stuff in Gmail.
Right.
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 Okay. So you don't necessarily have to do import-export. You could just put the account in there and just let all the
import
mail come over.
Right. Google calls it import because they're going to, you know, pull copies of your email out of the other service. So they're calling it import.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. Happy Saturday. Have fun.
All right. Thanks. You too. If you want to use multiple non-Gmail accounts, you're probably better off doing that in something like Thunderbird.
Dan, where are you calling from?
Yes.
Yeah, but
that's what I would do for sure, is to use a third-party
if you're not doing
mail
an import,
program.
Yeah. Right. But if you're doing an import, if you're just taking all your data and moving it in, and, you know, you can also forward all of your mail. So
it depends, right? Some services, like I think Yahoo requires that you pay in order to have a forwarding address work.
Oh, sure that. At any rate, the idea is to get off of an ISP-based email service,
yeah,
because you might change your ISP, or they may,
or you move,
like Spectrum and Frontier did, just say it's going to go away at some point.
Yep,
and then so do it on your terms and on your timeline, not theirs. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dan?
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Calling about Microsoft is stopping to support Windows 10 later this year. Can you give me a specific date when this is going to happen? And currently, I downloaded from the Microsoft website a PC help at a glance, and it notified me that my system, which is running Windows 10, will not operate Windows 11 because allegedly the processor isn't currently supported for Windows 11. My processor currently is a Intel Core i5 4460 CPU at 3.20 gigahertz.
Yeah, no, it won't. Yeah. Okay, so the date is, I think, October 14th, I think?
Yep, that's what Microsoft says.
So on October 14th, Microsoft will no longer support Windows 10. That means any security updates in particular, those are the ones that are really most important, are done. You're done. In terms of what you can do other than that, you have really two choices. One is to buy another computer, whether that's another Windows machine, a Mac machine, whatever it's going to be. or put Linux on the machine you've got, which is supported. I'm using, this is a 10-year-old machine. I've got a 15-year-old machine at home. They run the latest version of Linux without a problem. But the, Microsoft doesn't care. Okay, it's that simple. They don't care that you want to continue running Windows 10. They don't care if you can't afford a Windows 11 computer. They do not care. And I'm sorry to be that blunt, and I'm sorry that I don't have better news.
But
that's simply the truth.
So I don't think there's an easy way to give you the details of how to do this. But you can install or upgrade Windows 11 on unsupported hardware.
Maybe.
But it's a hacky thing.
And they're killing that option. Every time somebody comes out with a way to do it, they kill it.
I did it today.
Good for you.
Actually, on that computer right there, that laptop. And you can search on the web for installing Windows 11 or upgrading Windows 11 on an unsupported CPU. And if your alternative is to trash that computer or buy a new one and you think, well, what do I have to lose? I've backed up my data. Why don't I just try this and see what happens? Then you're no worse off than you were before.
At the worst, it should come up and say can't do this,
right?
And it doesn't kill your current machine.
I don't know if I'm still on talking to you guys or not.
You are.
But here's the thing: so realistically, my machine is about 10 years old, and I guess I can afford buying a new PC. This is a PC, it's not a laptop. So, I mean, there will be advantages by buying a new computer because it'll have probably a faster processor and other additional technology that wasn't available 8 or 10 years ago.
Yep, absolutely. If you can afford it, and we realize not everybody can, but if you can afford it, it is the best option.
But on the bottom line is that on October 20th, if I wanted to connect to the internet to check my email or to go to a website, it'll still work. It's just that the system will no longer be supported by Microsoft.
Absolutely.
Right. And the reality is that support stops on October 14th, which means that on October 15th, everybody who's been holding back viruses and malware will be releasing them because Microsoft's not going to fix the problem anymore. So, you know, we don't recommend that people continue using Windows 10 after October 14th of 2025.
But we'll probably see a rash of good computer deals for all of those people that are going to be orphaned by Windows 10.
Well, already we're seeing tariffs hitting from you know, everywhere that makes computers.
Are you trying to get me worked up?
I am.
But there are still some machines that are new and can't support Windows 11.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
that's
of
what
the
we're
chip.
Saying. That's chips, what we're
yeah.
saying.
Yeah. And
the bottom line is that you should buy a machine already with Windows 11 installed.
Yes.
That would be best.
Yes. Because
that would be the best thing to do.
It'll have all the correct drivers and everything else for Windows 11.
And when you buy a computer from somewhere like Dell or Lenovo, you can go to their support page and put in your serial number or your service tag, and they will tell you what all the latest drivers are for your machine, assuming you haven't changed anything.
Could that possibly then give me the capability of downloading Windows 11 if I went to Dell's website?
No. I wouldn't do it on a 10-year-old machine, no.
No,
you'd be ready to pick that thing up and throw out the nearest window.
Microsoft would tell you, right? They want you to be on Windows 11 really badly.
Right.
If they could make it work, they would make it work.
Right. And Dell is going to talk to you about drivers, not about changing the operating system.
Got it. All right. Wanted to get your opinion. Thank you very much for your time.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah. I've said this before back in December. When the first specter of tariffs raised its ugly head, I bought a new Lenovo ThinkCenter.
Sound by two names.
I started pricing out machines.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, I can really afford X.
Yep.
Right? So I was looking at the Think Centers, and I pieced it out to what I thought would be acceptable. And it was 2X. And I thought, oh no, I cannot afford 2X. And then I saw 48% discount because it's last year's model.
Yeah. Right.
So I said, yes, please.
Yeah.
And I now have that machine pre-tariffs, and I'm very happy with it. I'm almost done setting it up. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Webster, New York. What's up, Pat?
Yes, I believe you've addressed this at some point, but I use uBlock Origin.
Yes.
And I got a note on Chrome that said, this extension was turned off because it is no longer supported. And
yeah.
I think you told us one time what we should do, but I don't know what it is.
Well, there's several things you could do. First thing is there is a uBlock Origin Lite.
L-I-T-E.
L-I-T-E, which doesn't do everything uBlock Origin did, but still works.
Okay.
The other thing you can do is use a different browser, like Firefox or... I think Vivaldi.
I think it's just Firefox.
Maybe it's just Firefox.
Yeah,
just Firefox. Okay. Yeah,
well, Vivaldi already does a lot of that stuff by itself. So.
Right.
But anyway, Firefox, Google is clamping down on you not watching the ads, which is how they make their money. uBlock Origin is dead. uBlock Origin Lite. Viva the uBlock Origin Lite.
Yep.
Do I get it from the same website as uBlock Origin?
Yes. It's in the extension store for Chrome or whatever your browser is.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We are done. Wow. Wow. What an interesting array of questions this week.
Yeah, that was great.
It was excellent. I want to thank Dave Enright. I really want to thank Chris Horn, who took this Saturday off. Steve did not have to hold a gun to his head. He just came in on his own. God bless him. It was great to see him. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions this week. Good mix of stuff. Love to see it. Please, everybody, vote in the poll. We're getting Linda, getting everybody in Willoughby, Ohio to become a member of the station. So that'll be good. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in 166 hours.